Funding for this program was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by annual financial support from viewers like you.
Every time I enter this classroom, you know, I mean, I could be in a bad mood and all of a sudden I'll just start smiling and I'm happy. I like this class.
The curriculum that we use here at home is centered around the Bible.
I don't have to worry about telling anyone and what are they going to do and are they going to beat me up after school.
I can do it. I can graduate. I can do anything.
I'm Dave Iverson, and these are the halls of Bayview High School in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's a mid-sized school in a mid-sized city in the middle of America. It's about as average a high school as you could get. But of course, every school and every community is different. Each shape its students in different ways. And so on May the 5th, 1993, public television stations all across the country set out to capture those differences by spending one day in the life of America's schools. What was May the 5th like in Broken Bow, Nebraska? Or at a school for gay teens in New York City? How well does an experimental school in New Hampshire or a school for Indian youth in Washington State prepare its students for the future? What was May the 5th like in a religious homeschool in Minnesota or on an island off the coast of North Carolina? During the next hour, you'll meet some high school seniors who couldn't be more different, yet who also share many of the same dreams. We start at one of the oldest public schools in America. It's located in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it's home to a high school senior named Adeline Rodine, who began the morning of May the 5th like this.
My name is Adeline Rodine, and you know, I'm graduating this year from the class of 1993. And this is my video about the Cambridge Ranger Latin High School. So come on and follow me. This is homeroom. Homeroom starts from 8:15 to 8:36. I usually come to school very late. So when I come in, I just check in quick, and just, by the time I check in, it's time to go. What's up, TJ? I like coming to this high school. It's just different. You know, it's really big and it's very diverse. There's like students from everywhere. I'm Haitian. I was born in Haiti and I came here in 1982. Hey girl, class is this way. Where you going? You're not going to class? Political science is very fun. You know, we talk about different things and stuff. Like we discuss different issues. And this is where I sit.
And once they came into America, unless they brought a lot of money with them, which many of them didn't, okay, they let them start right at the bottom rung of the economic ladder.
If I came here, I'd be disappointed, because it's made out to be all over the world like it's some fairy tale.
Do you think immigrant group, do you think immigrants should have the same right to dissent and criticism of our politicians as the American citizens?
Okay, many of them had high expectations.
The U.S. and Haiti are different. There, it's like when you think about America, you just think about America like this and that. It's a, you know, rich, quote-unquote, rich country. I'd watch a TV show and I'd see, you know, people, like, they'll show America and you just look beautiful.
My family came to this country to find the quote-unquote good life. But it didn't necessarily turn out that way.
Am I going to overthrow America?
No.
Why? Because the system works for me. Is it working for you?
No.
No.
Right,
but that's what
no.
No.
Every time I enter this classroom, you know, I mean, I could be in a bad mood and all of a sudden I'll just start smiling and I'm happy. I like this class. I love coming in this room.
My pen says I'm a transformer. You see that? Teaching transforms lives. I am a transformer. Okay, serious business, folks. I need all of you.
I'm doing my warm-ups right now. My friends, they always think that I'm going to make it into the movie world or the TV world or something because I enjoy acting.
Come here, Matt. Come here, Matt. Go Xerox it for me, please.
Hmm?
Go Xerox it for me, please.
She's far too demanding.
Thank you, Matt. Oh, stop behaving like a spoiled child, Sherry.
Take that patronizing tone with me, you flea-bitten Cleopatra.
I always like people to hear what I'm saying. I always like to get my point across. And if you don't, I'll keep talking till you get my point.
This school has really taught me how to voice my opinion. I'm not afraid to talk about anything. For example, I think there's a lot of sexual harassment in this high school, but people aren't aware of it. I got sexually harassed during my junior year, and I did something about it.
Yes, right.
The music had just played, right? Seventh period was over, which meant that school was over. And I was walking downstairs to meet my friend at her locker. And a group of boys came, walked towards me, and one of them just grabbed my breast. And right at that moment, I felt disrespected. So I just threw my back down, and I ran towards him. And I just wanted to beat him up. He was so fast that I couldn't catch him, so I just gave up, and I was mad. And I left my stuff downstairs, and I just ran upstairs, and I banged in my house administrator's office. He tracked the boy down, and he came in the office, and he denied it at first. He denied every bit of it, and then he admitted, and he apologized to me, and I accepted his apology. Girls, you know, this is going out to the girls and stuff, and ladies out there, I mean, if you feel disrespected, you just have to let them know. Just don't keep it inside of you, because that would not do anything.
This is lunch A, and basically people just go off to eat different places. You know, some people choose to stay in the cafeteria, others just like hang around, you know, if it's nice out. All right, and now my friend and I, we're gonna do a little talking about boys.
No, not about boys.
About college, yeah, college.
My reputation as being a quote-unquote good kid in the school, I mean, it's not just never having fun. I have fun, too. Believe me, I do. It's like, you know, I go out with my friends and just chill and bug out, too, like everybody else do. It's just that there's certain things that I just choose not to do, and my friends respect that.
This is my friend Herman Banks, one of my good friends. I really look up to him. He's a very positive brother. He's not like those other boys, you know, who's all out for nothing. He's all out for an education. Go ahead, Herman.
I look up to her, too. She's a nice girl.
Aw, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Bye, Herman.
There's this counselor here, Marvin Daniels. And I guess he's pretty much like a father to me. You know, we talk about anything.
It's like everybody feels so close to Marvin. He trusts everybody. He leaves the door open. Like, people can just come in. Even if he's not in, people just come in. You know, he has, like, his keys and his stuff in the drawers, but he doesn't care. He just trusts these students.
Marvin's one of the few black staff here, and he really gives us good advice.
I want to make sure that they continue to be productive citizens in society, that they meet their dreams, that they have a vision. And if they don't have a vision to see something in them that they cannot see and lead them towards that.
This is my creative writing class, and I'm quite late, so she might be a little mad at me. All right? Lesson in falling in love with the right man. Study the man well, and make sure he has a heart. Not just any heart that pounds, but a sensitive one that has feelings and knows how to love you. Study the man. Make sure he is intelligent, not just school-wise. He has to be able to read you. Study the man.
Right now, my family's going through like a lot of financial crisis. The bank is taking our home away from us because of financial reasons. My father had left us during the summer of my 8th grade year, like I was gonna be a freshman in September, and he just left and went to Haiti and stuff. And it has been very difficult because my mother is the one that has to pay for the homes, the bills, take care of us and stuff, so. As a poor black Haitian female, it's like, I just don't give up. I am very poor and I'm black and I'm a female. I am a poor black female who's struggling to make it in this life, this society. And I'm gonna make it.
I'm gonna make it. That's always been the dream of America's newest immigrants. But next, we see how those same aspirations play out in one of those quintessential American locales, small town New England. Amherst, New Hampshire comes complete with all the requisite New England imagery, town hall, white steeple, leafy trees. But Amherst has also decided to rework its entire high school, to throw out the old and start anew. We start our next story outside the classroom, with some tarpaulin and a new approach to education.
Here, pull this set up. We got a snag. We had to dig a plot and rake the whole plot. It's been a time where we've had to work together, chop down some trees, go out there and, you know, work with each other physically as well as mentally. It's been really interesting, just a different way of learning.
But there's like another 15 feet of tarp down here.
Townspeople in Amherst, New Hampshire say they're committed to change in public education, and they've made good on their pledge. Last year, this wealthy New England town built a brand new public high school. They hired an all-new faculty to teach based on the philosophy of essential schools, espoused by education reformer Ted Sizer. It's a philosophy based on active learning. In teams, students at Sauhegan High cooperate to define problems and solve them together. There's no tracking here, no separating the higher achievers from the lower. It's democracy in the classroom. It's democracy that plays out in big and small ways. The faculty here asked seniors to decide which of their classmates they would like to see profiled for this story. They chose Michelle Long. She feels inspired by the classes here in a way she never did at her previous school, a traditional public high school.
There's no connection with the teachers. There's no real connection with even the material you learn. And here, I mean, you call your teachers by your first name in most cases, and the material, you really have to get into it. It's not just reading and taking a test. I mean, I rarely take tests at all. We do projects where we work with other students, and we really have to know the material because a lot of times we have to teach other students what we learned.
It's 9:30 on May 5th, Native American Studies class. It's held in a longhouse built by the students, covered temporarily with tarpaulin instead of birch bark. They perform an Iroquois ceremony. The idea is to experience Native American traditions, not just through books, but firsthand.
So here's what a flesh offering essentially is. They just take your skin. They just pinch your skin a little.
Every day is different, and that's what I like most about it. It's not monotonous, boring day. I love school. I never would have said that before, but but yeah, it's really fun, my day. Okay.
For school to be fun is a major development for Michelle. Before this year, she was shy and uninvolved. There'd been trouble with alcoholism in her family. Her father's business failed. They lost their home, and her mother had to move out of state for a job.
And that was pretty hard for me, just to see my mom go away, but.
And I see her how often?
I see her probably once a month.
At the beginning of the school year, Michelle's peer outreach teacher spotted subtle signs of trouble and persuaded her to join a weekly meeting for children of alcoholics offered at the school.
I'm concerned about who people are in their whole person, their thoughts, their feelings, their experiences outside of school as well as in school, and helping them cope. And peer outreach is really about helping people get ready to learn when they bring in some baggage to school, like most of us do.
This is all for you. We're going to schedule it to your needs.
Michelle credits the school with giving her critical emotional support and a new lease on life. She's gotten involved here, so much so that she ran for a seat on the community council. This group of students, teachers, and townspeople makes important decisions about school policy. She was one of five seniors elected.
I'm not afraid of jumping into new things anymore, and I think that's been the biggest thing. I've done so many things here that I never would have done before. People have shown me the power that I could do that, and then I've taken that within myself and said, yeah, I can.
When classes end this afternoon, Michelle heads for the nearby city of Nashua. For her senior project, she takes four children from an afternoon Y program and works with them.
Happy.
Happy?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy?
Crazy, yes.
Feelings are modeled in clay and explored.
Do you get a mad face, or do you just get mad inside?
Stamp my feet.
Stamp your feet? Who makes you mad?
My mom and my dad.
Yeah, what do they do?
In the community of Amherst, there are concerns that the new high school program is too easy, that it's not strong enough on academics.
It's been easy, but yet it's been hard because you really have to think. And we don't necessarily do the same traditional test-taking and stuff, but that doesn't seem important to me as long as you know the information that you're getting.
By contrast, Michelle recalls an American history class at her former high school. She got such good grades she didn't have to take the final exam. But today, she remembers nothing of American history.
It doesn't matter if we're in New Hampshire or New Mexico or Nebraska. At about 2:10 or 2:15 or 2:30, they leave, the last bell rings, and they pick themselves up at the door where they left themselves 7 hours previously. They go off to the parking lot, and they take off to worlds that have nothing to do with chemistry class or algebra 2. And so I think that a lot of times kids in high schools are in a situation where they really don't connect to anything important and purposeful for them.
Try and get those boards like Derek.
For Michelle, the program at this essential school has paid off. She's headed for the University of Vermont. Her teachers at Sauhegan High have inspired her to pursue a goal she used to think pointless. She wants to be a high school English teacher. As she leaves, she's curious about the younger students here who'll spend 4 years in active learning.
I look at the freshmen and I think that when they get out, they're going to know so much more, know so many more different things. They're going to be such interesting people, I think. And I just can't wait to see when that first freshman class comes out. I think they're going to be really interesting people.
How well will that last school, Sauhegan High, prepare kids for the future? As the community of Amherst, New Hampshire continues to debate that question, some parents elsewhere are opting for an even more radical solution. They're taking their kids out of school altogether. For them, it's not only a matter of high school curriculum that's questionable, it's the entire high school experience. Why, these parents reason, should peer group pressure be more important than parental standards? So next, the morning of May the 5th at the Lindstrom household in Rochester, Minnesota. Participants in a growing movement called homeschooling, in a place where the school day begins at dawn.
I usually get up between 5 and 6. We usually read together starting between 6 and 6:30. Each morning is part of the stuff that we do together as a family. We read 5 Psalms and a Proverb. The curriculum that we use here at home is centered around the Bible.
our bankruptcy laws, God's way of disciplining debtors and creditors.
The curriculum that we use takes a verse from the Bible and applies it in different ways to different areas of our lives.
On May 5th, David Lindstrom had just turned 18. He was looking forward to graduation and to his graduation present, a trip to Russia with a group of missionaries.
I'm interested in doing it because the Russian people have been unable to get their hands on the Word of God, I guess. Well, I think that the Bible is the basis for everything I, just about everything I do. And I wish it were the basis for everything I did do. If I could constantly think about the Bible and what it has to say about every decision I make, I could. I'm just about guaranteed success in life.
He says he'll live at home a few more years while he goes to community college. He's aiming for a career in computer science, like his father, Dean.
Why don't you put that in the microwave and just zap it? You know,
Ruth Lindstrom traded a career as a social worker to teach her four children at home.
We took the children out of school because our worldview really differed from the public school's worldview.
The children began learning at home before Stephen, the youngest, had started school. Amy, now 15, was in kindergarten, David had completed second grade, and 19-year-old Sarah had just finished third.
I became really concerned about Sarah. Already is more concerned about relating to her peers than to us, her primary social institution. What will she be like when she's an adolescent? And David was just showing more and more negative social reactions to us, to just all of life.
David's problem, according to his mother, was that he was bored at public school.
He was doing number combinations of 3 plus 2 equals 5 at school and having to do 3 pages of that, while at home he was doing division problems with his dad for fun at dinner and things.
C squared plus A squared is B squared, or C squared plus B squared is A squared, or, David?
25 sevenths squared, or 25 sevenths plus 1/4.
David takes high-level math classes at Rochester Community College. On May 5th, he sat front and center during calculus. As a high school senior, he aced 5 math and science college-level classes. His parents attribute his success to the foundation they laid at home. He studies constantly to get good grades and to learn. When we asked him what he does to relax, he told us he studies some more. Fractal geometry is his favorite hobby.
It's not predictable, and yet it is. I mean, it's such a simple equation can be so complex.
David has had to learn to do research, and he's probably better equipped for independent thinking now and independent work than he would have been if we'd forced him into a group setting where he had to conform to group standards, which sometimes are kind of mediocre.
From Bible study on, the day is organized so no time is wasted. Stephen prepares breakfast and David practices piano while Dean checks Amy's math homework. The morning mealtime isn't just for eating, there's Russian to be learned.
Miska. Miska.
At the piano teacher's house, David tackles Mozart while Amy works on her math some more. In the afternoons, Sarah teaches, David studies, and Ruth rides herd.
Are you guys? Can you come in about 20 minutes? Do you have a watch, or should I ring a bell, or what? I'll holler, okay? Okay, we'll see you. I think the home is the best place to see character built in children, and that's more important than academic skills. When we first took the children out of school, I was really concerned about their socialization skills. Now, that would be the first reason I would take the kids out of school, because I realize now that what we're doing is training our children for adulthood, and other semi-socialized children are not the best way to achieve that goal.
In the Lindstrom household, the goal is everything. Here's David on the subject of dating.
I don't see any practical purpose for dating. People say that the real reason for it is to meet your future spouse, but I don't think that dating really accomplishes that purpose. If the Lord wants me to be married, then he'll show me who he wants me to marry.
The children all play instruments in addition to piano, and they all play in the community orchestra. Music is supposed to be their entree into social life, but it hasn't really worked that way for David. He's private by nature, he says, and he wouldn't be any more outgoing if he had gone to public school.
He's so like my husband. It's just incredible. And it's so reassuring to, you know, look at my husband and think, oh, this is what Dean was like, and Dean's made it in life, so I guess David will too, you know?
That's right. Father.
For dinner, Sarah has prepared a discussion of Renoir. She graduated in 92, but the family believes in continuing education.
Do you think that's where he learned to paint the skin looking so transparent?
Though there were times they resisted, the Lindstrom kids say they'd all teach their own children at home.
Because the parents can influence their kids rather than having everybody else influence them. And it seems like you get more education for your time.
You know, you grow up hearing about the 3 R's being taught in Pioneer America, and basically that's what education, I think, is all about.
The Lindstroms say they're pioneers for the 90s, offering a back-to-basics alternative in an increasingly complex world.
Because once a child can read and write and do basic arithmetic functions, the whole world is open to them.
David Lindstrom has in his home school a sense of purpose and community. And sometimes entire school communities are formed to provide a safe haven, a place where students with different worldviews can be themselves without fear of negative peer pressure. Such a school can be found 1,000 miles from Rochester, Minnesota, in the heart of Manhattan. It's the Harvey Milk School for gay and lesbian teens, a place where high schoolers Mary and William are getting ready to face the future.
If the Harvey Milk School didn't exist, many of these youngsters would spend their days in the streets. They might hang out in the piers. They might be looking for Johns. They might be hustling. They would not be finding employment, most of them, because they would be without high school diplomas. Unfortunately, so many schools are alien to our kids, where these kids find no representation of themselves.
I remember this one incident in my old health class. The teacher wrote the word homosexuality on the board, and the whole class went crazy. And he used the word homosexual in the beginning, and then after that, throughout the class, he used the word faggot. You know, he's like, these faggots this, and when I was young, I used to go beat up these faggots, and then the whole class was cheering him on, and I was just sitting there totally crushed.
In my old school, there were 3,000 kids. There was a student there, the one student there that was openly gay. And I think my worst fear was to be treated like him. I mean, he was constantly ridiculed.
The Harvey Milk School was opened in April of 1985. The Institute for the Protection of Lesbian and Gay Youth had a drop-in center. They noticed that many of the children were showing up before the end of school, some of them as early as 10 or 11 o'clock. Kids said, well, it's not safe to go to school. We can't go there. We're not happy there. We're not wanted there. And so the Institute worked with the Board of Ed to establish the Harvey Milk School.
I came to Harvey Milk because I was failing in my old high school. I was beginning to disassociate myself from the other students. I started to isolate myself from everyone, and that started to affect my grades.
Many of these students were not succeeding in their regular public schools because they were either being attacked violently or harassed by their classmates. Some students actually found that they were being threatened by their teachers. They were outed by their guidance counselors. And some students, for just speaking their minds, found themselves to be outcasts.
I came here at a time when I was realizing that I was a lesbian, and I was scared of what people might say when they found that out. And I mean, scared to the point where I couldn't function. I was very excluded, not just me. All gay, lesbian, homosexual issues, bisexual issues were totally, it was like they didn't exist, and that's so unreal. They do exist. And I never learned that who I was, it was okay. I never learned it was okay to be who I was.
And we're going to be reading two sonnets today. And who
at this time, there are 27 students registered at the Harvey Milk School. We have three girls and 24 boys. Their ages range from 14 to a day before their 22nd birthday.
Okay, what kind of compliments would you use in a love poem to someone you really cared about?
The school basically has to meet the same requirements as every other high school. Many of the courses taught here are taught on an individualized basis, and the youngsters are responsible for teaching themselves. It encourages them to take on responsibility. It empowers them to teach themselves.
The Harvey Milk School offers me a place where I don't have to worry about being myself. I can just be, you know, whoever I am. I can come in, I can do my work without anyone bothering me, picking on the fact that, you know, that I am gay. The kids come in and they can just talk about whatever. They don't have to worry. And if they have any problems, they can ask the teachers, because the teachers are supporting a gay positive environment. So, you know, there's no question of the teacher's not going to relate to me, or, you know, do I have to worry about bashing? Because it's not going to happen.
The Harvey Milk School makes an effort to train the kids in certain marketable skills. We deal with real issues, real subjects. Reading, writing, and arithmetic are our major concerns. We try to teach self-respect, and we try to teach respect of others, regardless of differences in culture, religion, or gender, or just attitude. We try very hard to prepare our kids for the very real and sometimes hostile environment outside these doors. And I think we do a pretty good job.
I think Harvey Milk just is a school where you just have to work on your self-esteem, first of all. A lot of the kids come in and they're really down. They were put down in their old high school. They don't know how to deal with a lot of stuff. And then they come in and they see this environment where they can be themselves. And just, it builds on self-esteem first, and then it builds on education, and then it builds on getting you out of high school and working outside of high school and having to deal with everyday life outside. What are you going to do after you graduate? And I think it's done a pretty good job, because I came in with absolutely almost no self-esteem at all, and now I have, like, some, a pretty decent self-esteem.
The New York City Board of Education failed to teach me about who I was 25 years ago. I didn't find out about being gay until I was 20. And I didn't have an easy time of it once I found out about myself. Now I find that I'm a gay teacher teaching gay students, not necessarily about being homosexual, but at least watching them and seeing that they are able to talk about their needs and their fears and their confusions and their joys. And I feel tremendously blessed. It's like a dream come true. I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
I had a half a year left of school, and I almost didn't make it. I don't know what I would have done if the Harvey Milk School didn't exist. I'm going to go to college in the fall. In 10 years, I see myself as an actress. I see myself with a diploma, hopefully a master's. I see myself with children, with my girlfriend or my wife. I see myself as a political organizer. I'll never give up trying to end homophobia. I see myself trying to set up more schools like Harvey Milk in states that need them desperately.
I needed an outlet for the things that I was seeing, the things that I was feeling. And I found photography was one way of me doing that. After I graduate, I'm hoping to go to an art school. I'm pretty much involved in doing photography for myself. I'm hoping to pursue that field and go into that. I just hope that in 10 years I have a basic middle class lifestyle. The, you know, the American dream of what is right.
I want to have a middle class lifestyle, the American dream. So says William at the end of that last story. No matter the place, no matter the circumstance, high school seniors dream of making it in America. It's a hope we heard repeated over and over again on May the 5th, a dream that seems best nurtured by supportive teachers and a sense of place. Our next story is about the way in which location helps cultivate the aspirations of one student, Serena Paul, one of seven high school seniors who lives on Ocracoke Island off the coast of North Carolina.
I've been to another school, and it's like you dread it every morning. Yeah, I don't like to get up in the morning, but when you know you're going to somewhere where you have a lot of friends and everybody's like family, it's worth getting up for.
Serena Paul's family has been getting up on Ocracoke Island for at least five generations. On May 5th, Serena and her 10-year-old sister, Tanya, ate a quiet breakfast together. Their mother's job with the state ferry service requires her to work long hours, and the ferry is the only way to get to and from Ocracoke. Serena can take a bike ride through her neighborhood to get to school. The trip takes her by the home of her boyfriend, Ashley Morton. Ashley is also a senior, one of three in the class planning to go to college. There are seven members of the school's senior class.
Okay, before we get into Heart of Darkness and Apocalypse Now, what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about these journals.
All seven seniors are in the English class. The teacher, Alton Balance, is sometimes called by his first name. Balance is both teacher and neighbor.
Our school's very small. I mean, you're not going to see a big library or big classrooms. You're not going to see any doors on the classrooms. I mean, everything is open.
What is that?
You'll see a lot of kids playing together. You know, they're all very friendly and close-knit. It's like a family. But as for schoolwork, we do just the same as everybody else.
The stuff that goes on other places is in another world for most of these students. At a morning break to buy milk and snacks, the students pass by a headline noting school violence at the state capitol 250 miles away.
We would never think that anything like that would ever happen. I mean, like, I'm sure a lot of kids look over their back every day at school or something, but we're very safe.
In Algebra 2, they just gave you numbers, and those numbers you manipulated and got an answer.
Small classes are good. The teacher has a lot more time for you. I have one class where there's only two of us, and we all and the teacher sit at a table, and she just helps us with whatever, and she does her work on a piece of paper, and we watch. I mean, that's the advantage of being so close and having so few people.
Okay.
What we're trying to do here is get approximately the same concentrations of everything we're using so that the concentration doesn't affect conductivity.
This class of two juniors and two seniors teams Serena with fellow senior Valerie Gaskin.
She's been a good friend. We've been together ever since kindergarten, you know, so we're like sisters. A lot of people have even said, "Are you sisters?"
Gotcha.
In a school with kindergarten through 12th grades, there is always interaction. Serena Paul made an additional effort to help with younger children.
So I go in there every day for one period, and either I go outside with them. I mean, usually the teacher's around too, but sometimes I go outside with them and we just play, or I help them do their homework and stuff.
A lot of time after school is filled with a job. Serena's work is at a place called the Beachcomber.
I started working when I was like 14 years old, not even old enough to work, but I begged my mom, you know. It's just what we've seen everybody else do. You know, our parents work, so we want to work, you know. You want to have your own money, buy your own things.
While the changes after graduation are not yet comprehensible, Serena Paul believes this school, this family, has prepared her for whatever the future brings.
They've taught us, you know, manners and how to live like friends and family.
Serena is going to the University of North Carolina at Wilmington.
I'm very excited to go, but I'm very scared. I don't know what to expect. I've never even been to the campus, and I've only been to Wilmington once, and that was when I was much smaller. So I don't know what to expect. just so many, I'm going to be scared of so many people around, you know, and just like having to make new friends, you know. I mean, I'm leaving the beach and going to a beach, but it's still not going to be home. I mean, you know, there's no beach like this one.
As you'd expect, the graduation rate at Serena Paul's High School on Ocracoke Island is high. Dropouts there are few and far between. But for many teens, getting through high school is far from a given. So what's a typical day in May like for a student who's bounced from one school to another and who now at the age of 21 is finally ready to graduate? Our next story comes to us from the Lummi Indian Reservation in Washington State.
When I went to public school, it was just kind of like I was just there and nobody really cared. And they didn't really want to talk to you or anything. They didn't want to teach you. I used to travel around from school to school. I was kicked out of Ferndale and Bellingham and see home. Just go to the next one.
Wednesday, May 5th may look like an ordinary school day for Matt Warbus. But the 21-year-old Lummi Indian is very proud to be in school at all, considering how many times he had dropped out.
And this one, you'd move it over twice. But the highest grade I'd get was a C or a D.
Did you expect that you'd finish school?
Not when I was in public school. But I came out here and everybody out here is like family.
That wasn't the case in the public schools, where being different was a problem.
I'd be walking by people, someone would say, hey, there goes that Indian. There goes an Indian, or something like that. And they'd make some kind of smart remark about that.
Liquid has volume but no shape of its own. And takes the shape.
Matt came to us a little bit older than you would think of the normal person to come to high school, and with practically no record of high school credits behind him.
Paul Avery is acting principal at the Lummi Middle College High School in Bellingham, Washington. The high school, run by the Lummi tribe, is an educational safe haven for Indian teens who have often had disastrous experiences in public schools.
I think probably one of the greatest reasons is that they felt really alienated in the public school system. And when they dropped out, they had no place to go. They were at a dead end. They came back to the reservation and they had no skills and they just really had no place to go.
The dropout rate had become a serious problem for the Lummis. They are a proud tribe with rich traditions, but with an 80% dropout rate among their children, tribal elders began fearing for the future of their people.
I looked at the numbers and realized that unless we did something ourselves, that nothing was going to be, that these kids were going to fall through the cracks.
My concern was my daughter. She was pushed out of the public school and she had nowhere to go out here.
Willie and Josie Jones felt that it wasn't enough to have a tribal elementary school, that high school kids also needed their own school. They launched a community campaign, and against all odds, in 1988, the tribal high school opened its doors. For Matt, the new high school offered a perfect opportunity. After moving around aimlessly for a few years with no place to really call home, he had just settled down with his aunt and grandmother.
What's Loretta have planned for you?
And the combination of a stable home life and the tribal school helped foster a new sense of self-confidence.
When I went to white schools, or public schools, I mean, I didn't want to learn. And there's one guy that changed that for me. that work used to work out here. And he always told me, you can do it. And every day he goes, you can do it, you're good. And he goes, keep telling yourself that. You can do it, you're good.
1 square yard equals 9 feet square.
In some ways, Lummi Middle College High School is no different than any other high school. So seniors like Matt must complete all the same credits required by Washington State for graduation. But it's not just about academics. It's also about redressing an educational system that in the past has meant forced assimilation, racism, and neglect. Paul Avery has witnessed the results.
Kindergarten, you'd have 20 white youngsters in a kindergarten and 20 Native Americans. By the eighth grade, you'd have 20 white youngsters and 8 Native Americans. And by high school, you'd have 20 white youngsters graduating and 2 Native Americans.
So at the tribal school, Native American culture is the basis for the educational program, not just an extra credit.
Did you learn a lot talking to different people?
Matt, for example, combines his love of traditional art with his core classwork.
This one time he was saying it was real windy for a long time, and so he carved a wind mask.
He not only carves for art class, he writes about the tradition for English class.
A long time ago, in the 1800s, they took away everything, actually. And I would like to try and bring as much as I can back from the past. If I don't keep this up, then we could probably lose it forever.
Matt plans to continue studying art after graduation. He's also interested in electrical engineering, and he takes special pride in beating the dropout odds that nearly claimed his future.
Here I am. I'm about ready to graduate high school. I'm finally doing it.
For our final story, we return to another one of those classic American landscapes, this time in Broken Bow, Nebraska, the heart of the American Plains. We began our hour with a story of Adelaine Rodine, the Haitian immigrant determined to make it. Later, we heard the story of David Lindstrom, the homeschool pioneer. And so, we thought we'd conclude in a community founded by both immigrants and pioneers, a place where a sense of history remains a part of future dreams. It's the story of Destry Oxford, in Broken Bow, Nebraska.
Broken Bow is, you know, it's a smaller town, and it's right in the middle of the state, right in the middle of America, and you got all these friends, everybody you grew up with around this county, and your family came from this county. There's, you know, you're rooted down in this area so much that, you know, it's kind of hard to leave.
Open this up, and we'll go around and get around these cattle and bring them up, and then we'll pin them in here and sort some of them off.
Okay.
Bear, you want to let the dog out?
Destry Oxford is from Broken Bow in Custer County, Nebraska. A little over 100 years ago, this was the frontier. A few months before the county was founded in 1877, General George Armstrong Custer was killed at the Battle of Little Bighorn, a few hundred miles away. Destry Oxford's roots do run deep here. His great-grandfather Herbert helped pioneer Custer County near the turn of the century, when Custer County had almost 250 one-room schools. Custer County still has 8 one-room schools. Destry Oxford attended Burr Oak from kindergarten through 6th grade. Today, there is trouble on the old frontier. In the last 50 years, Custer County has lost almost 50% of its population, many of them its best and brightest young people, people like Destry Oxford. But Destry is a good example of a new phenomenon on the plains. After 50 years of going off to the big cities, more and more young people are wanting to stay and make a life in these small communities.
From the McCaslin Ranch, 250 Angus, Angus Cross, and crossbred heifers and steers.
Destry Oxford's family recently moved to town after the ranch they managed was sold to new owners. Even though they no longer live on a ranch, they still rent land and raise their own cattle. Today, Destry is going to school early. Even with only 290 students, Broken Bow High has a large swing choir. Destry and his classmates sing about putting on the Ritz, but for most of them, that doesn't include moving to the big city.
It seems like there's so much confusion in a bigger city and everybody wanting to go in all directions, and you know, I'd probably get lost.
Destry is far from the only one who isn't attracted to big city life. His girlfriend, Jill Varney, shares his interest in returning to Broken Bow or a small town like it.
I think you have more freedom here. Just, you can do more things, and I'd like to have my children grow up here because they can be involved with everything and they can feel safe. I wouldn't have to worry about them if they wanted to go for a bike ride or, and everyone helps out everyone. You get a chance to have more friends and know everyone. And just a lot of more opportunities open up.
Well, have a good meeting.
FHA members sign up for recycling on Saturday and FFA banquet on Friday. Now listen to this. Lunch charges. Mrs. Varney is getting quite cranky. And if you don't get them paid, she will be calling your parents. Brad White, are you listening?
After homeroom, seniors in good academic standing are allowed to do whatever they like during their study hall. On most mornings, Destry and Jill head off for breakfast together. Unlike most nearby towns, Broken Bow's population is at an all-time high. Once considered the beginning of the frontier, today, with the glamour of big city life clouded by crime and pollution, it's becoming a new frontier, where people are attracted by the clear skies and slower pace of life. The new McDonald's, where Destry and Jill like to have breakfast, was enthusiastically welcomed by the people of Broken Bow just last fall. Taken for granted in most towns, the McDonald's is seen as a possible sign of an improving economic future. Just a few years ago, Broken Bow was caught up in the agricultural depression of the early 80s, losing 26 businesses in 6 months. The future looked bleak for young people like Destry and Jill.
My dad worked at a savings and loan during that time, still does. And he told me lots of stories about he would have 60-year-old farmers come into the savings and loan and start crying in his office because, you know, they had to foreclose or they couldn't get the money they needed.
Even though Destry and Jill are not interested in a future in agriculture, they both want to return to Broken Bow after college. The hard question is, can they make a living here? There may be a new vision on the old frontier. Students in Broken Bow can take Japanese language classes broadcast nationwide by Nebraska ETV.
I would like the Broken Bow students to hand me your papers, and Dunning students, if you'll go put them on the fax machine. I've got all the buttons pushed.
Just down the hall from the Japanese class, Destry Oxford and his classmates are pioneering yet another new technology, two-way fiber optics.
In the middle of June.
It's something new for not only Broken Bow, but Nebraska, really. We interact with one other school in my class, which is 40 miles away. They're right there in the room with you, but you just see my TV screen.
Anybody have a farewell speech to the Dunning students here?
May the force be with you, a quote from Obi-Wan Kenobi.
This class went a lot.
This rapidly evolving technology may give Destry the opportunity to have a big town job and a small town lifestyle.
So Ben, where's the party tonight?
Up the Pertum Roadways.
After school in the evening, Destry and Jill cruise Main Street in Broken Bow. They are both planning on going to a small Midwestern college. Neither plans to study agriculture. But even with the economic uncertainty, they are optimistic about a small town future.
In the community, they teach you how to work hard and believe in yourself. And if you work at it, you're going to get there. Even if you are from a small town, if you want to move on, I think they really show how you can do that.
You're on your own. You're on your own level. It's your world. You can go how fast or how slow you want to.
Destry Oxford may well find a future in Broken Bow, Nebraska, but what of the future of Adelaine Rodine in Cambridge, Massachusetts, or Marion Williams in Manhattan, or all the other high school students we've listened to for the past hour? Makes you wonder what May the 5th will be like for each of them 5 or 10 years from now. I'm Dave Iverson. Thanks for joining us for High School Stories, One Day in America's Schools.
Funding for this program was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by annual financial support from viewers like you.
This is PBS.